Thank you. Now, this emerged into a unique genre of music known as the blues, because soon people added commentaries to this music. Soon they added words, and they were often words in an AAB form. The opening piece that I did, St. Louis Woman, or St. Louis Blues, is about lost love. The woman whose man was stolen away by a woman with store-bought hair. And watch out for those. She sings, "I hate to see that evening sun go down. Oh, I hate to see that evening sun go down. For my man has done left this town." Now, behind the blues, there's a whole theology. There's a relationship between the blues and an understanding of the fall. There's a relationship between the blues and an understanding of the prodigal son who comes back. There's a relationship of the blues and realism about evil. John Storm Roberts argues the typical white ballads always have a lesson, a moral tale. For example, the Dixon Brothers' Wreck on the Highway has this line, "I saw the wreck on the highway, but I didn't hear nobody pray." Whereas a black ballad about an accident on the railroad, the death of someone called Railroad Bill, no relation, simply says, "He died with a cracker and some cheese in his hand. He died with a cracker and some cheese in his hand." Here are some lines by a black singer after the kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby. "Oh, who would steal a baby out of his little bed? The world is full of trouble, trouble. Oh, Lord, have mercy on us folks." Blues is preaching. Blues is a prayer. As one of my friends who is an African-American blues musician from Memphis has it on his calling card, and he'll tell you, "I am not having the blues. I am the blues. I am the truth about the blues." In other words, the blues is a music that you inhabit because it inhabits you. Now, it's a fascinating form, which, as you know, eventually gave us urban blues, which eventually gave us rock and roll, which is a whole other subject for some other time. The blues had a baby, and they called it rock and roll. You know that. But in this realism, there is an echo, and not a dim echo, of biblical realism. Much of it is drawn out of the wisdom literature. Now, how is the wisdom literature of the Bible structured? Well, it's in parallelism, isn't it? It's in AAB. And the connection is not fortuitous. The greatest blues singer of the Old Testament is, of course, Job. And he sang with the same kind of lament that blues singers use. Now, not all blues is sad. Some of it is mischievous, humorous. It's critical of hypocrisy. But it's a profoundly Christian music because of its realism. It's simple but profound. Here is a wonderful blues by the great Thelonious Monk. Thank you. Thank you. One other ingredient you must mention if you're going to do full justice to the different streams that flowed into the central river of jazz is, of course, the marching band. And in many of the cities across the South, there were marching bands. And particularly in places like New Orleans, which is in a French part of the world, the favorite form of the marching band was the Napoleonic fanfare. And Africans couldn't always read music, but they loved the instruments, the trumpet, the clarinet, the drums. And they took those instruments up and they infused, as it were, new life into them. They marched without crossing their feet, and in great rhythm, they would have a call and response, gospel-oriented type of marching band music, which was admired the world over. If you travel to some of those cities and you happen to be a trumpet player and you bring your trumpet along, you can still participate in those marching bands. And the genre that most expresses the aesthetic of African Americans, and which was most important as an ingredient in the background of jazz, is the funeral procession. And you know that the funeral processions in the African American church were a little different from the typical white church. There would be a service in the church, and the band would be outside playing very soft, slow, lament-like spirituals. And then as the casket came out and they marched slowly towards the cemetery, the band would play songs like Eternity. And then when the body was interred into the ground, the band would light up into the most joyful music in the world. Because, as Jelly Roll Morton, the great pianist, once said, we Africans know that the birth is the sad time for the troubles we're going to see, but the death is the joyful time for the Lord of Heaven that we're going to see. And they had it, their theology was perfect. So the marching band became this wonderful feeder into New Orleans jazz. They, of course, didn't have pianos in their marching bands. Here a couple of tunes that they would have played.
Thank you.
All of these ingredients came together, and then something of a miracle occurred. I think the word is not too strong. At the beginning of the 20th century, something emerged of a new musical type. It began to be called jazz for reasons nobody quite knows. The word is a mystery. We don't know where that word comes from. It may be a racist sully. When whites first heard it, they called it jackass music. You take away the CK and you get jazz, which was the early form. It may have come from a singer named Mr. Jazbo Brown, who sang around the Mississippi Delta. It may just refer to the French, this is my favorite theory, jaser, which means to gossip and swing as you listen to music. Now that's a theory. But whatever the word means, it came together in this extraordinary synthesis that gave us the music of classical jazz. James Rhys Europe took jazz to France during World War I, and the French fell in love with it because they recognized that much of the heritage, musically, harmonically, of jazz came out of a French background. The French, Ravel, you know, he loved jazz so much that he named his dog Jazz, and he composed trios that had the word blues in them and so forth. James Rhys Europe would take songs that were written by French people and he would improvise them into his band. You know, improvisation is not just do what you feel like. Improvisation means take a series of obstacles, a series of challenges. In jazz, for example, this typical structure is 32 bars. And it's A, A, B, 8, 8, 8, and 8. And each measure has a certain chord that goes with it. And the challenge is to build on the melody and to weave a narrative out of those wonderful chords. And it can look very different from one performance to another. And you don't want to move too fast into the exciting stuff because you want to build slowly with tension. There's a story told that two elder African-American jazz fans went down to check out this young, hot jazz trumpetist, Roy Eldridge, in a Chicago nightclub. And the ones had heard him before, the other hadn't. The one who had heard him before, as he was performing, turned to the older one and said, isn't he the greatest? And the man said, yes, he's probably the greatest trumpet technician that I've ever heard. But he hasn't yet learned to tell a story. And then as the tale goes on, they went down to check him out a few years later, and he had merged technique into his story. He didn't use technique as an end in itself. Improvisation, if I may say this reverently, is something of what God did with the human condition. He wanted to save his people, but there was the problem of sin. How can a good God remain just and yet be the justifier of sinners? Well, he improvised this wise and extraordinary surprise solution of the incarnation and the cross and the resurrection. He took these obstacles and he turned them on themselves and wove a narrative of hope and salvation in them. And jazz at its best is a reflection of this extraordinary realism about sin and the joy of getting free from sin. And much, not to make a cheap shot here, much white music is not so much joyful as it is happy, because it hasn't reckoned with sin. There's, of course, the other kind, which is so dark and depressing that there's no joy. But good music that's going to reflect who God is must somehow go through the valley of the shadow of death before it can get to the horn of plenty and the banquet table on the other side. Perhaps no one else so embodies America's greatest music as America's greatest composer, whose name is Edward Kennedy Duke Ellington. Duke Ellington is jazz. His passion and his work sprang from an awareness of the presence of God in his life, according to Jana Steed, his principal biographer as a spiritual man. The narrative of biblical Christianity, particularly in its African-American version, is the underlying aesthetic behind much of the astonishing artistic achievement of this foremost American musician. Now, most jazz audiences know Duke as the urbane, stylish entertainer and public personality that he was. But he also had deep roots in the Christian faith. Brought up by godly parents, in the Baptist Church and the AME Zion Church. He knew all the hymns and the Bible stories by heart. He read his Bible every day, and he prayed regularly. And although his schedule often precluded being in church on Sunday morning, he attended midweek services or just walked in and sat down in a pew for inspiration. Throughout his career, he took material from gospel tunes and wove them into music. The presence of a forgiving God was always real to him, as can be witnessed by a line in one of his songs, "Forgive us our necessities and the hunger that makes them necessary." One of his pioneering achievements, don't know if you knew this, is the video clip. 1934, there's a 9-minute film that he composed called Symphony in Black, A Rhapsody of Negro Life. And it was done by Paramount Studios, and it's a precursor to the modern video clip. In fact, it was the first time a film completely integrated music into a screenplay without the use of dialogue. It contains 4 segments. The laborers, with workers rhythmically stowing cotton bales onto a boat to a blues-like song. A triangle featuring the then, as yet undiscovered, Billie Holiday singing the blues. The mournful A Hymn of Sorrow, a sort of church service where the congregation is in grief over the death of a little baby. And finally, Harlem Rhythm, a joyful celebration featuring the great dancer Snake Hips Tucker. And the film superimposes scenes of Duke composing at the piano, the Ellington Orchestra, melodramatic incidents from African-American life, singers, dancers, all the compelling sounds of jazz. Janna Steed highlights the relation between this film and Ellington's view of suffering. He had himself lost a child as a young father. He wanted A Hymn of Sorrow to be a gift that suggested healing for his listeners. He further wanted audiences to know something of the plight of black people. When asked his thoughts about Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, he candidly said it wasn't true to the life of his people. Duke wanted the hymn last because he had put into the dirge all the misery, the sorrow, the undertones of the conditions that went into the baby's death. But the studio prevailed and underplayed this stark reality by ending the symphony on an upbeat. The heart of Ellington's message goes well beyond a description of the oppression of his own people. In the last decade of his life, he wrote 3 sacred concerts. These had been somewhat neglected until recent years. The first came in 1965 to be performed in the Grace Cathedral, San Francisco, as a part of their building's consecration. It was a combination of previously written materials with new works. The opening number, In the Beginning God, which we sing in our band almost every time, would win a Grammy Award the next year. Neither was this composition, nor the 2 sequels, in quite the same genre as a mass. Rather, the idea was to compose an oratorio that could fill a large church, one that could awaken congregations to the spiritual dimension of life throughout American music. Duke Ellington, when he was interviewed, said he was looking forward to the day when we didn't have to talk about jazz, folk, rock, or other categories, because he didn't like the word jazz insofar as it seemed to pigeonhole a certain music. He said he was looking forward to the day where there would only be 2 kinds of music, good music and the other kind. What I'd like to do is end with a brief medley of Duke Ellington tunes and remind you that this great man is only one of the many tremendous artists in the tradition of jazz who believed the gospel. Notice the diversity and the entertainment value of his tunes. You know, the word entertainment is also a French word, entretenir. It means to maintain a conversation. It means, in some acceptions, to maintain a conversation with eternity. We need to be entertained. Of course, today the entertainment industry has overtaken us with all kinds of lewdness and scary material that we don't want our children to be attached to. But in its best, entertainment is something like the reminder of heaven that God gives us every week by giving us a Sabbath day of rest, by giving us recreation. It's like C.S. Lewis's image of the Christian life. He said, the Christian life is like a horseman on his journey, a hard journey, many miles to go. But then he comes upon an inn each night, and he rests his horse, he rests himself, and it is the innkeeper's duty to provide good food and good music, entertainment for the night. We are not to confuse the inn with the final thing, the final destination, but entertainment reminds us that there's more to life than simply the drudgery of Monday morning, Monday through Saturday. Second, his music is a reminder of the history of African-American people. He believed that music should help with the reconciliation and the justice among the races. So much of his music was a celebration of African-American life. But third, and most important, he believed music was for the glory of God. And he wanted more than anything for his music to celebrate the reality of God. And I hope you felt tonight, as we've explored a little bit about this extraordinary music we call jazz, that there is an indissoluble connection between the best jazz and those African-American spiritual roots, which have now made this music America's music, because it is the Lord's testimony in sound. Here's a melody from Duke Ellington.